Good afternoon. You're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio and Local Media This Week, the programme where we look at the local print media here in County Clare, the Clare Champion and the Clare Echo, and we sort of let you know what's in it and suggest what you might want to read. The programme is sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography, and we're very grateful to Ruth for her kind sponsorship. Now, looking around the table, we have our full house today for the first time in a while. John S. Kelly. John, good to see you.
Delighted to be back, Jim.
Pat O'Brien. Pat.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Welcome. And David Fleming, back after his week off.
So. Yeah, I'm fully refreshed now, Jim, so get ready.
Great. And on the buttons, we have Luke Fleming, so you're welcome, Luke. Now, looking at we'll start with the front pages. And I suppose, looking at the Clare Echo, there are two things in the front page. One is the Clare Minor Footballers, and they're celebrating the Daryl Darcy Cup, and they do what all teams do. They make a big pile of themselves on the grass, but they're obviously enjoying themselves, and I think it's like a B competition, Pat.
B competition for the Clare Limerick, Tip and Waterford, so.
Yes.
That's what the winners and the runners up in Daycock and Kerry in the Munster Championship.
In the Munster Championship. So great for them that they have overcome.
Yeah, they get a few games anyway. Like, I think they'll play around Robin. They've played Waterford Limerick and Tipperary already. So they beat Tip in the final.
What level?
It's minor, under 17, John.
Minor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also in the Clare Echo, Doonbeg candidate slams fake news. And somebody that we had here in the studio at the last time round, Councillor Rita McInerney, she wasn't councillor then, she was going for the Dáil, but didn't succeed, but she was co-opted recently as a councillor. And she's giving out about what another Doonbeg man talks about is fake news. And that she's being, there's a smear campaign, she says, suggesting she's been critical of the farming community and against the spreading of slurry, and she strongly rejects that. So I suppose she would be concerned because it would be a rural community.
It would. Well, they do say politics is dirty. Mm. And slurry is a pretty dirty business. But it seems, I mean, this is the cut and thrust of politics, isn't it? And you get this. I mean, go back to ancient Rome and Pompeii, and you'll see the graffiti still on the walls there.
They were terrible blackguards then.
Oh, yeah. And so this is nothing new, and you need a good thick neck, and I think happily Councillor McInerney has that good thick neck. She knows, and she's calling it out, and that's exactly what a candidate should do. If you're accused of something and it's wrong, you say so, and you tell us what you do stand for.
Do you expect a riposte?
I do. I would expect to hear what her view is. If she's been criticised for saying that farmers shouldn't be spreading slurry, and she's saying that that's fake news, well, what is she? Like, there's no smoke without some little bit of a fire. What did she say? Or is it completely invented?
And then all promotion or all publicity is good.
She's on the front page of the Clare Echo. How good could it be?
Yes.
And she's smiling there, and of course she's pictured there beside Donald Trump. Does that mean Donald Trump has
endorsed
her? I think Pórig is being a little bit a little bit mischievous by bringing Donald into the fray here, because of course he was the politician who coined the term, supposedly. I'm not sure if he did, but he certainly used the term fake news. But anyway, yes.
It's a matter of interest. I'm interested in what people think the origin of fake news is.
Yeah.
Because as you pointed out,
It's a new term for a very old thing.
Indeed.
You can have two types. Before, we would call it lies. or mistruths was a. Now we have two different things. You can have misinformation and disinformation. Misinformation is me saying something, but I have mistaken it. It's not intentional. I made a mistake. I might say, John, you're not a friend of farmers. And that might be a mistake. I just took you up wrong. But if I said the same thing and I knew exactly your position. That's disinformation. I'm spreading it intentionally to cause trouble. That's what fake news is as well. But fake news can also be the misinformation.
Well, the story, I think, against Rita was put out in Facebook and in WhatsApp messages to various people around Dunbeg.
Okay.
So they also said that she was against the and the Green Mayor, which I think Rita has a shop in Dunbeg, so I don't very much if she's against the Green Mayor coming into Dunbeg.
Yes.
You see, people can say anything online. There are a lot of mis and disinformation out there now. And again, we've talked about this before. In a way, we kind of rely on the professional journalists to wade through all this murkiness, the lies, and we know that governments are up to it and states are up to it. We'll see the American election now coming ahead. We'll see an awful lot of this.
So our responsibility then, the five of us around the table, yeah.
Well, we rely on people like Porrick to call it out and to facilitate us then discussing it so that maybe the public might have a view.
There's a lot of people maybe not going to stand for politics, and we have to have a balanced view on it as well. You know, those people recently began to wonder whether they agree with or not. Rita is representing people back in the Kilbush political area.
Yeah.
The same as all the rest of the councillors, and we need councillors to represent us at the county council level. And if there's a lot of stuff thrown at them.
And tell me, Pat, do you think that what we say around the table every week has any impact on the thought level of listeners?
I don't know. I suppose people listen to us and the stories and what have you, and the stories that be really on the papers.
Do they?
They make up their own mind.
I hope we might stimulate some ideas, and they might be shouting down the radio saying, "That O'Brien, I can't stand him." and isn't Fleming fantastic?
Yes.
They're probably saying the total opposite.
Are we hoping at least that in some way we impact?
We'd like to think. I think we sometimes forget that anybody is listening to us and that we're just talking amongst ourselves. Yeah.
I suppose if we promoted debate on something, I mean, I think that would be great.
Yes.
We're not, you know, we all give our own opinion, but we're not trying to form opinion. We're just maybe... If people thought about it and read it themselves and formed their own opinion on it, that would be great.
Okay. Yeah.
I think hopefully people might pick up the newspaper so that they can have an informed opinion.
Indeed.
As well.
Yeah.
And I think even here in the Kildare electoral area, and we might know an awful lot about the rest of the area. We do, I suppose, maybe the Shannon and Innes, but most councillors went to the job and they work very hard, you know.
Absolutely. None of us suggest.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
Yeah.
Lord.
And they give their viewpoint and they're willing to represent the people, and even it mightn't be accepted by the council officials, but at least all the councillors.
It used to be church gate, mass at 11:30.
Yeah,
and up in the back of a lorry.
A speech afterwards,
That's what the councillors had available to them.
That's right.
Now they have so much more.
Yeah.
But it's door to door now, and it's
Screen
to screen. Listen, we must go on. The front page of the Clare Champion. Ukrainians told to leave Ennis home this month. And underneath that, the subheading is War Refugees Describe Letter to Leave Abbey Hostel as Heartless. And this seems to be somebody wrote a letter that they had to leave because of whatever. And I suppose the wording of that letter certainly seemed to have caused distress.
Yeah.
Well, indeed. I mean, good grief. After all we've been through, it does appear that the influencers, those who make the policies, haven't yet learned that there is a good way to communicate a message and there is a not so good way. And that in the front page of the Clare Champion. Good grief. the tone and even the language itself lacked proper respect. Am I right or wrong?
I think you are, John. It's very difficult, the whole situation at the moment with this week, the large numbers of mostly men who were removed from Mount Street, which was unsuitable, and maybe where they were moved to was more suitable. But when police turn up and they have the buses beside you, I can guarantee that some of them who experienced war would be frightened out of their minds to see that sort of thing happen. And again, the communication. Remember, many of these people don't speak English, including the Ukrainians, and so they're given a translation saying you're to move and you're not allowed to come back. In this case, what this is about is the government announced a few weeks ago that all new Ukrainian refugees in this country will only be given support for 90 days, accommodation for 90 days. And after 90 days, they have to fend for themselves. The other types of refugees, if you're a man, you don't get any of this, of course, and you're given, if you're lucky, a tent. So, but, I mean, we're in a crisis when it comes to helping out people who are refugees, Palestinians who are fleeing the war in the Middle East, Ukrainians, Afghans. There is, John, I think it was you who mentioned before the program started an editorial in today's, this week's Champion. Border bind is one of our making, and it's making all the headlines that most of our people seeking refuge are coming through from Britain through the north of Ireland. And the editor there is talking about the bind that this has created, because we as a country want no border there to facilitate all sorts of things between the north and the south and between Britain and Ireland. And yet now we also see that migrants, because of what's happening in Britain, will want to come here. Because as one of them said, he doesn't want to go to Rwanda.
Yeah. What do you think of the bind we're in that regard?
Well, Pat, let Pat in first there while I think of what my opinion is.
Well, in regard to those people in Innes, those children probably in those families going to schools in Innes now, they have made friends. Probably the people in the Abbey Hostel, they probably have made friends and, you know, made friends around Innes. And I've never heard any kind of negative stuff about Ukrainian people.
No.
So why are we shifting?
Why you're just getting them all shifted out of there now, and there's no account of where they're supposed to go to.
Well, they're supposed to fend for themselves, unfortunately.
I think it's
but I suppose the problem the government faces is Ukrainians are continuing to come into the country. They have no accommodation for those people. So they're saying, right, we've given you 90 days. Now we have to leave another set of people in for 90 days. It's awful. And I wish we did have the facilities for everybody, not just Ukrainians.
We have loads of state facilities in the country if the government put a plan in place to make those facilities available and make them livable for those people. Yeah. I see, and I've said it before, I think a couple of times on the radio, where there was £14 million worth of state buildings owned by the HSE. They were empty.
How many?
£14 million worth of buildings owned by the HSE that are empty. Hmm. Why?
And army barracks.
And army barracks, yeah. There's loads of places around the country.
And the nurses are waiting, apropos that very thing. The nurses are waiting for the movement to build nurses' homes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And of course, we'd be familiar with that, you know, half a century ago.
Yes.
There were nurses and nurses' homes built as part of every hospital.
Absolutely.
Now, John, another thing, and I'm going to bring this up tonight. 13 billion. We got 13 billion of money from Apple.
Or we have to hold it until
Why don't we spend it? Why don't we go away and spend it on hospitals?
Because I'll tell you why. I'll give you the government's position.
Yeah, but the government, I don't mind the government. The government's position is always the government position. It's the same way.
Well, the government might say, we'll take that money, but Apple might say, good luck to you lads. We're moving out.
But no, Apple has 17 million. Apple has 17 billion in a fund in America to pay that because their note was coming up.
Yeah.
Now, that money, it was over in America. The Irish government didn't take it. They were forced by the EEC to bring it over here. Now, the government didn't put it into, give it over to an investment group.
Yeah.
Now, the investment group, of course, are bringing big money out of it, profit and great money out of it. And the 13 billion is losing money.
Yes. But the government have said the government believes that it is not entitled to that money under our tax laws. The European Union said entitled. Apple, of course, agree with the government.
But it hasn't been decided yet.
It hasn't fully been decided yet.
It could take years upon years.
It could, but sure, listen, if I bring you to court and I say you owe me 10 million or 10 euro, you don't want somebody else to be spending that while there's still legal proceedings going on.
Well, I think it should be spent. I think that we should we should build facilities.
And if we lose the case, we'll have to pay it all back.
We should build facilities for
Our Lady's Hospital seems to have been...
I think it's a private... It's bought by a private company.
Oh, has it
been
bought?
Yeah, private company.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are more empty houses.
Loads of them,
In various states of repair, right around the county.
Yeah. And empty convents, empty monasteries, a lot of buildings, often some in private hands.
Pat raises a very important question, though. Not that yours isn't equally so, but he's saying, what about the interest on the 13 billion?
That is interest that Apple would be making if they had possessed the money.
Who gets the
if interest? Apple win their case, they will get that interest.
But it won't be the
if timing. The Irish government win the case, or sorry, if the European Union win the case, then the Irish government would stand to benefit.
So we're on the pig's back.
Well, maybe John, maybe in 10 years' time, maybe we might be.
Yeah. But
it's just going to take that length because the barristers and all those people are going to be making loads of money.
Well, listen, will we move on because time is moving from something.
Just before we go, Jean.
Yes, I've heard that often. Go on.
I see an article in the Sunday Business Post on this 13 billion, and if the same rules were. If you owed 100,000 tax, if the same rules were applied to this money, they were applied to you if you were caught and you didn't pay your tax, this fund should be 19 billion.
Well, the fines are...
The fines, there's another thing there, where you pay half the money, there's a...
Yes, like a penalty.
Penalties.
Yes.
Penalties and tax.
Yes.
And that will bring it up to 19 billion.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to have to wait a few years. You have to leave the legal... Mm. You have to have the lawyers their day in court.
Yeah, we mightn't get around from this 19 billion spent.
Well, we'll go on to another project in Ennis, that instead of costing money, is going to save us a fortune. And that's the post office field. And I know, Pat, you are a big fan of the post office field and always have been, but the post office field could be developed and it would save us a fortune.
Yeah, well, maybe,
millions.
Yeah, maybe the NS 2040 would, or maybe the HSE should imply the NS 2040 people, because health benefits worth 7 million from Boardwalk. Jessica Quinn has the story. The proposed amendment of Venus Post Office fee could result in health benefits to the county capital worth an estimated 7 million.
What are the health benefits?
I think you have to walk. You have to walk on the
board.
And maybe they have been able to quantify how many euro of health benefits you get for every step.
Look, lads, I don't believe what I'm hearing.
Well, the idea was if you walked, it would save the state
over
a lot of money.
Yeah, over 30 years.
7 million.
I think it's the greatest heap of
how
spin that I have ever heard, and this is a clever way to present
it. A pure spin, yeah.
A pure and utter spin. We leave our readers and listeners to make up their own mind. I'm with Pat. This might be a rare thing to say. I'm with Pat O'Brien on this question. I do not want to see this developed. I'm. Pat now might have different reasons for it being not developed, but leave. We have very few green spaces in our big cities and towns.
Yeah.
And very few in Ennis.
And very few in Ennis. And this is a nice, and I'm sure during the Celtic Tiger they wanted to build on it. It was somehow saved or wasn't built upon. And let it be natural. We don't need a bloody walkway going through it. Now, in the paper, you have somebody called Ian Douglas, ecologist and agri-environmental consultant, ID environmental consultants, and he says it's a great thing. It's going to help the environment. But of course, anybody hired by the people proposing the development, who is going to say this?
Yeah.
I have seen many planning applications in the past where they're proposing, where you get even conservation architects proposing to take down buildings, the very buildings that they wouldn't ordinarily want to see demolished. But because they're being paid by the company or by the people to do a report, they're saying it.
Mm. Now, there's a nuance in what you said there, David, that the work of the ecologist is kind of, what's the word I'm looking for now? Suspect.
Yes.
I have a granddaughter who is an ecologist.
And she might say something completely different.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, and this is the point. You'll get a whole range of different views. He's saying, this is a fantastic project that promotes connection to nature. It disturbs nature, is what I would say. And I'm not even an ecologist, but anybody in their right mind. And there's some pictures of what it would look like.
Yeah. They have to go in there and dig up and put on foundations.
Yeah, they say it's going to be a small footprint, but it will disturb. And even the very presence of humanity walking through. Because when I came to live here and we were more regularly in Ennis, you know, the animals do their own thing out there and they're not disturbed.
Yeah. I don't think the photograph does anything to entice me.
No, the photograph is on page 8.
How much walking can you do in on this boardwalk? You know, wouldn't you be better off to go out the Clon Road and walk it or out the Tull Road?
Out to Lees Road.
You'd
be very welcome to come out to East Clare and walk all the way from Tomb Graney to
Killaloe. And you'd be better off to go there. They probably have a garden at all these people that will be working. They probably have a garden at the back of their house. They'd be better all over ground. They'd be better off if they went away and dug it and so it was once and camping. Forget about the walking on the boardwalk.
Okay, anyway, we're down on the boardwalk. Pyrite is still there, and it's on the front page of the Clare Champion again. Pat, there seems to be not just a problem with walls and blocks, which we have talked about and seen over the last couple of years, but a problem with foundations as well.
Yeah, fresh worries for pyrite homes as foundations risk identified. And then there is the story there on the front of the Clare Champion. Clare homeowners whose properties are damaged by defective concrete blocks should not be expected to leave their foundations in soot when rebuilding following the discovery of pyrite within strips of foundations in affected buildings in Donegal. That's the call from Clare Pyrite Action Group Chairperson Dr. Martina Cleary, who has criticised the exclusion of the cost of replacing house foundations in the defective blocks grant scheme.
Hmm. This is the same person who's a candidate in the municipal district.
Sinn Féin local elections candidate.
That's a fairly common sense thing. You're not going to go building if the foundation is
true.
Presumably
they're the same blocks.
And we're going to go waste more money in building on top of the foundations that's damaged.
What are you going to do? Well, I think what they want, of course, is a better compensation scheme. That's what they're looking for.
And what options are there?
The only option is you don't build on a bad foundation.
Indeed.
You rebuild somewhere else. And that's going to be massive costs.
Or you dig out the foundation.
Or you dig out the foundation.
Yeah, they want to take out the letter and discard the environmentally blocks and the foundations. Yeah.
So, Jim, could you sum up the status of that whole pyrite thing now as we see it?
Well, it still seems to be up in the air, because I don't know of any, and maybe you correct me, I don't know of any houses that have been knocked and rebuilt at public expense. But it's a terrible, I mean, I know one person with problems with the house, and it's a hugely stressful thing. I mean, to realise that the house you've been in for, you know, many, many years is suddenly crumbling.
And if you already have put thousands into repairing, as they thought, and now find, oh God, we forgot the foundation.
And a lot of these are people maybe who their mortgage paid off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're still paying the mortgages, on houses.
Oh yeah, people are still paying more recent ones.
So what's the answer? From a citizen's point of view.
I mean, as a state, I think we have to assist people to rebuild their houses.
Which is huge.
I don't think we can just let them do it themselves. And
this is the department, the usual department, penny pincher. You know, they won't give the money from the fund. They'll give the money from the building, but they won't give it from the foundation. This kind of stuff. Now, I heard Martina Cleary this morning and Claire again. And she was interviewed by Ellen Morrissey.
Yeah. Who is Dr. Cleary?
And she's the chairperson of the private action group in Clare.
Oh, yes, sorry.
And she's standing for Sinn Féin here in
Clare. Yes, sorry, yeah.
But she was at a meeting in Dublin, and there was department officials there. And she said there was no government.
Who called the meeting?
Well, it must be a meeting with the department. The department must have called it.
Yeah, and of course, all our...
All our TDs. There was none of our TDs, is it?
None?
No. From Clare.
That's rather strange, isn't it?
There was three Sinn Féin. There was three Sinn Féin TDs, one from Donegal, one from Mayo, and I don't know the other one or something. She said there was three Sinn Féin there, and there was nobody from Northern TDs.
Now, you're on the ball on that.
That's what she said this morning on the radio. That's what I was listening to on the radio this morning.
Yeah. That's very, very serious.
Okay, listen, we'll move on again. I'm still on page 2 of the Clare Champion. Lads, all is solved. Fresh move to tackle ED overcrowding. We've only about 4 minutes left before the break. 3 minutes left before the break, correction. A HSE support team has been sanctioned to sort out the problems in Limerick, in UHL. Why wasn't this support team put in a year ago?
It was in 15 years ago.
Or 15 years ago.
Well, listen to it for the last 15 years.
Yes. Yeah.
The support team only comes on an emergency basis. It's a sticking plaster, and I don't think anything permanent will change, because I don't think it's as simple as putting in. It's not just about managing existing resources. What is interesting there in Dan Danaher's article, during an RT1 radio interview, Mr. Gloucester, this is Bernard Gloucester, the CEO of the HSE, stressed that despite overcrowding at UHL, it is now safer following the deployment of additional resources since Aoife's death. Yet, it was this week announced that HICWA, who are the people, the regulator of the health service, on the 21st of November, roughly a year after poor Aoife's death, an unannounced inspection was carried out on the Accident Emergency Department in Limerick, and it failed miserably. And they concluded it was unsafe. So Bernard Gloucester has been caught in a lie, it would appear to me, that it is because the state's own regulator, a year after her death, is saying, this is only last November, is saying that it's still unsafe.
Have you got the last paragraph of that article in front of you?
I do.
Do you mind what the last sentence?
It says, despite improvements at UHL, Dr. Gray said it is still a dangerous place. And this is Jim Gray, who was the only ED consultant on call that weekend when Aoife Johnson died, but who was not required to be on site, told the inquest that not only was the ED a death trap on the night. That sentence doesn't make full sense, but and that nothing has improved, which is a damning indictment of it. And yet we are told that the clinical advice, Colm Henry is the chief clinical officer for the state, his advice to the government and to the Minister for Health is that it is not clinically safe to reopen any of the accidents and emergencies that were closed 15 years ago.
I mean, this beggars, you know, belief. It's peer review, in a sense. And one would assume a certain degree of objectivity.
Yeah, you would. You would like to know how he arrived at that decision. Yeah. Because, of course, if you look at those hospitals today, of course it would be clinically unsafe because they don't have the resources. But if the resources was put in, would it then be clinically safe? There is another talk here in the newspaper. I know you want to go on, Jim. There is talk of the purchase of Barrington's Hospital in Limerick. To act as an additional. I know Pat is gagging now to get in. Go on, Pat.
Yeah, I see that. And Claire Colin Malloy said, that, oh, that this was a. It was a
Councillor Claire Colin Malloy.
It was a no brainer to go in and pay 12 million for Barrington's. Why would you go and pay 12 million for Barrington's and develop into it for three hospitals?
You have three hospitals waiting to be developed.
Yeah.
That you own already.
Really?
Yeah. This is my final point. I can't see, and it would be probably wrong to reopen Ennis and Nina. It would be wrong to open Ennis only, or Nina only, because we are part of a region. We shouldn't be thinking on a county basis. Therefore, Limerick is probably, being the centre of the region, the only place that you should open an additional accident emergency. So St. John's or Barrington's. But if you open a second emergency, either in Nina or Ennis, it won't serve the entire region properly. Mm.
Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, that is a point.
You should build a new hospital, really, and no more than three hospitals out and so on, because all those old buildings, like, they're fine for the surgery and things like that in Connie, but they're not suitable for long-term patients.
Pat, have you a piece of music that we can... bow out on at half-time.
All the rain I'm getting, I just went back to Bob Beckerick and BJ Thomas, and raindrops keep falling on my head. They're falling all day.
And BJ Thomas, my favourite version of that song. Okay, thank you, Pat.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did me some talking to the sun.
Raindrops keep falling on my head, as I said, I think the best version by BJ Thomas. And you're welcome back to part two of Local Media This Week, sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography. And in the second part, we largely talk about East Clare. Lots of items in the papers this week in relation to East Clare. Just one thing, harking back to one of the things we talked about there with the post office field and consultation and that kind of thing. It was interesting to note no photos allowed.
Can't understand. In
a consultation process. And in a, presumably there were boards on the wall and maps and various things to show people.
Yeah.
You're not going to remember everything.
Cameras banned a public consultation of post office speed development. That's a bit
they're kind of trying to control the narrative. Yeah. And I'd say they're so sensitive, the NS2040 people and their consultants, after all the issues that have come up about Abbey Street and all the other things that they're proposing, that they're now... trying to control the narrative, which is not
very
right.
Regressive.
It is regressive.
Yeah.
And it's also, all it does is raise suspicions.
It does.
We'll go looking now to see what behind the comma and the full stop.
There was over 100 people attended the public consultation drop-in events, which held on Wednesday and Friday from the plans to develop the post office field.
And that has been, I mean, I don't know, is it 20 years since that issue was raised before?
It has been raised from time to time.
And I thought it put to bed.
Yeah, and it's been left as it was, and I think this should be the same.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on anyway. We'll come a little closer to home and to East Clare. Looking at page 5 of the Clare Champion there, architect eyes bright future for Queen Abbey, and as somebody who you know, admires Queen Abbey and visits it from time to time, it's John, it's a fabulous place.
Absolutely, Jim. We talked about this so many times in the past, and you're looking at a site that is the responsibility of the Office of Public Works, which can be an advantage or a disadvantage. But to date, Quinn inhabitants have been left on the lurch. They have tried to get it up the list of significant sites in County Clare, and really, we're not allowed to say it has failed them. So we're saying in this article, the architect, that man, he's living in O'Gunlow.
Yeah.
Gary Wiley. Do you know anybody know him?
Okay. I don't know him.
No.
And it's very, very interesting. It's a medieval village. Beautifully presented in its nakedness, I suppose, really. And it's crying out for investment with the Inish culture in mind.
Mm. But John, what Mr. Wiley is proposing to do is to restore it completely,
yes,
and put roof on it.
Yes.
Now, that of course goes against all the principles of the current philosophy around architectural heritage. Mm. Ever since 1964, the current thinking is that a building should be left alone, that it should be conserved but not restored.
How would Holy Cross say to that?
And I would, having visited Holy Cross only last week, I had a look around, and I'm afraid to say they did a woeful job whenever they did it a couple of decades ago. Because once you start restoring a building, you begin to put a 21st century stamp on it. You take away, you can often damage. Now, this mentioned, Mr. Wiley mentions the Victorian period, I think, or the French. The French restored in the 19th century, began restoring a lot of their ruins. And as a result, they're very fairy tale. They're reimagined things. If you go to Carcassonne, you'll see lovely buildings, but they don't look medieval. They look, they're 19th century imaginings of what a medieval thing. If you look at Holy Cross, they began to use concrete in Holy Cross. Concrete did not exist in the 12th century. So by definition, you are interfering with the building when you restore it. What the OPW have done, which is according to the law and the way we do it right throughout Europe, is we conserve it so that it doesn't fall further into ruin, so that it's kept. I love Queen Abbey. Queen Abbey is a very fine, intact ruin, but it would be ruined if we started to interfere in it and put roofs on it.
So here we have a school of thought that opposes traditional restoration models, isn't that?
That opposes Victorian restoration. We haven't really restored anything in this country to its original Holy Cross accepted, and that was the Catholic Church. But the OPW have not restored anything.
So are you saying,
and most of Europe don't do this.
If we look at the second photograph, Pat, from what's the name of the place?
Doolin
Gore Powerhouse.
Donegore Castle, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's on page...
I don't think that was restored.
On page 4.
I think that building was always there. All they've done is that they've pointed it with lime. They might have repaired the roof. That's not a new roof. I can see the moss growing on it. So, I mean, if the building had a roof, you should keep the roof in it. But if the building like Queen Abbey doesn't have a roof, it would be questionable whether you would put a roof on it.
Hmm. I think Ballintubber Abbey was another abbey that was restored back a few decades ago.
Didn't they put a glass roof on the one in Kilfenora?
They did, and that would follow the current thinking that if you are going to do something, it should be very distinctive from, you're not trying to repeat the past. It's supposed to look modern, so that you can actually
see the difference.
Because
there'd be a school of thought that won't agree with you. You appreciate that, David.
Most of the conservation architects in the country who have been trained, and most of the rest of Europe, and indeed European law, would follow the way I have articulated it.
Yeah.
Because if you did what the Victorians did, massive damage in this country, less so, but in England, to their by dolling up, by reimagining their old buildings.
You recall from the 19th century and the 20th
century. That's the period I'm talking about.
Yeah, you'll recall the actual the taxation on a roofed house invited zero tax.
Yes,
if the roof wasn't on.
These are the rates. Yeah. And if a building was unoccupied, yeah, i.e. didn't have a roof on, you weren't taxed.
We had wholesale spoliation of
And that's why many of our big houses became ruined.
And do you think that...
And in some cases, in very few cases, but a handful of cases, I would say, I know maybe two or three examples where those houses have managed to get a roof back on.
Yeah. And
but we're talking about two very different kettle of fishes. This is a medieval structure.
No, we're talking about the
Queen Abbey.
The Queen Abbey.
Whereas often those big houses were built in the 18th and 19th century, so re-putting a roof on those wouldn't be massive.
Are you saying,
but it generally doesn't happen.
Are you saying, David... But it's how it's done rather than it being done at all.
Under the Venice Charter, and remember, Europe was destroyed during the Second World War, and so these are debates like that would have been held in Berlin. There was a big debate about what happened to Notre Dame Cathedral, whether the spire should be rebuilt. Now they have decided to restore it exactly. And so there is always this debate, but that happened a year ago, a couple of years ago. And so, some people would have argued, I don't think many people would have actually argued that it should have been put back, but whether the spire was a 19th century in Notre Dame, the spire was a 19th century addition, and there was a big debate about whether that should go up or not. I like Queen Abbey, I think, for the reasons Jim likes it as well, because it is a fairly romantic ruin, and it is evocative, and you would lose that. When I went into Holy Cross, I didn't get the same feel.
So essentially, Paul, it's down to buildings which are the property, or sites which are the property of the Board of Works, okay? As I said, that may be an advantage or a disadvantage. Whoever heads up that particular segment within the Office of Public Works has the strength to impose its view.
Well, the Office of Public Works would have signed up to things like the Venice Charter from 64 and also current European law, which has the same approach, minimal intervention. I just looked up the European law on this matter. Now still make the case for a restoration job, but like Jeremy Irons down in West Cork took a tower house. I don't know, was a roof already on it or not. Bunratty probably already had a roof, so they're not restoring it as such, but they're keeping what is there. So I mean, you can get away with these things, but by and large, the philosophy is
you're against it.
Well, I'm just repeating what the philosophy is at the moment.
Do you know the linkage between in the museum in the Bully Acre, you know that?
Oh, the Collins Barracks Museum.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the linkage between
the
two. There was a debate at the time whether what form this linkage should take. And I was on the board of the National Museum. And I remember hot arguments coming from a few people who were seriously involved.
I suppose one set of people argued that it should look exactly the way it should be built in limestone, look like the buildings, and then others would have said, no, it should look very modern.
Yeah.
And the feeling amongst most architects, and an architect, of course, wants to put their own stamp on it anyway.
That's right.
You need to distinguish between...
What's the old and
what's
the new.
And if you look at Queen Abbey, you will see some of that is 12th century, some of it is 14th century, and some of it is 17th century.
And that's the way it evolved, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's so the way it evolved.
So it's 21st century as well.
Well, put a glass roof. But I can't see it being done. It's a wild, fairly wild. The OPW wouldn't accept it at all, I don't think. So... Mr. Wiley can...
It was a college one time, there was 800 pupils in it.
Supposedly.
It was a college one time, there was 800 pupils in it.
And I wonder about the history presented here.
Mr. Conway came in 10 years after and he killed all the friars. And,
yeah. But they came back, like all good clergymen,
yes.
After the death. and they remained there, notwithstanding the law, which did ban regular orders like the friars. The Franciscans, but they, notwithstanding the law, again, sort of a Clare thing, they ignored the law and stayed there until... Now, they said they were expelled. I don't think they were really expelled. I think their numbers had dwindled to such an extent that they couldn't sustain them.
It was a clan type of diocese. Jim?
Yes, no, we need to move on. Go on, Todd.
I would love... the champion readers to go to page 4 to Dungora Tower House to see what a restoration can do, even if it violates.
I think the word is, I think conservation. I think they conserved it rather than restored it. And I think it's a lovely conservation job.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll stay with page 5. East Clare musicians in tune with Gaza. And there's a concert tonight in Feakle.
In Peppers, Jim, yeah.
In Peppers.
No, tonight is?
It's Sunday night.
Yeah.
At 8 o'clock. And it says the lineup, Pat, is like a who's who of East Clare musicians.
Great musicians there. Mary McNamara, Matt Donlan, Sorcerer Costello, Andrew McNamara, Patton, Eureka O'Connor, Paul and Eva Carroll. They will be joined by the folk singer and lecturer Jimmy Cullen. Brendan Hefty and friends will be. Rounding up the evening with his music as well, so I know most of those musicians on there.
Yes.
The next six.
So
we hope to have a good evening, and of course it's a worthy cause to the people of Palestine.
And the best of musicians. Okay, there's a feature on in the Clare Champion, because next week is the 30th anniversary of a very sad, tragic occasion which took place here in East Clare, and I suppose David, as somebody who
didn't
wasn't living in the area at the time.
Yeah, and for younger people who may not have been born even at that stage, I think number one, it's probably important that it be remembered, and number two, for people like myself and others to see what was going on. It's a full page. It's Owen Ryan, and. For those people who want to read about it, it's there for them.
Yeah, so it's something that part of our past, and as I said, very sad, very tragic.
I should say, it's sad for East Clare, Jim, and I suppose there isn't. We are not going to improve it by any way by what we see. And it's a sad chapter of East Clare.
Yes.
And
okay.
I see the people involved.
Jim, if I might say, I knew Imelda Rani quite well. I employed her in the college for summer courses. And she was an outstanding artist, apart from being a very, very nice type of person.
Gentle person, yeah.
Very, very nice type of person. So one does remember down through the decades.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another... Pat, I'll stay with you. Another sad event which took place in the last week, which has left Tulla, I suppose, in shock, is a road accident which claimed the life of a young man from Tulla.
Tulla is in shock as a local man becomes a 70th road victim. About Jessica Quinn's the story there. An East Clare community has been plunged into sadness this week after a young man from Dangan and Tulla became the 70th person to die on our country roads this year. Mikey Foley, in his early 20s, lost his life when a quad bike he was driving collided with a tractor at Terry Bryan Gotland Sunday. He would be later there this Friday morning following General Mass in St. Peter's and Paul Church, Tullow. So I suppose it's a sad occasion for the Foley family. I know Mike Foley and I know his mother as well. So it's when somebody dies like that in an accident, it's very it's terribly shocking. Well, and look at it, I suppose the people will rally around him, and we'd like to give our condolences to the Foley family.
Yeah, yeah.
Behalf of the radio.
Okay, we're looking at, we'll go to the East Clare page, page 13 in the Clare Champion, and these are compiled by Dan Danaher. Article on the top there on Killaloo Ballina Tennis Club.
Yes, and yes. This is a very exciting one for not just for Killaloo, but for anybody who plays tennis. And people will have noticed over the last couple, maybe the last 2 years, a very large structure near the existing tennis courts going up, and there's a fantastic picture of what it looks inside. It is a covered tennis, two tennis courts, a covered courts. It has cost €1 million, state-of-the-art development for the tennis club there. More than a decade of countless hours planning and sourcing the best materials and facilities for a huge steel frame dome means that 700 members, I didn't realize the club was that big, 700 members can book a slot to play tennis all year round, and good heavens, isn't it built at the right time with all this rain happening in the month of...
It's going to become a thing.
It is going to become a future, yeah.
Our sports facility. Yeah.
There's a nice photograph there of Avril Hayes, a former junior chairperson, with current club chairman Patrick Seymour in the new indoor tennis court.
Yeah, and the funding was by the National Sports Capital Grant Programme, J.P. McManus, Benevolent Fund, the Trauma Trust, Clare Dover Global Development Company, North Tipperary Development Company, the Ireland Fund and Controller Limited. A total Clare and North Tipperary leader provided 350,000 and Sports Capital Grant allocated 180,000. The Trauma Trust 100,000 and 50,000 from the WeToo Foundation and J.T. McManus Benevolent Fund. So they have a lot of money put in, and they've raised more money than 58,000.
Yeah. The other piece there, oh yeah, on the back actually, just while I'm looking at it as Pat is holding up the newspaper, on the back page of that portion of the Clare Champion, Pat, Flagmount National School celebrating 50 years. And they celebrated last weekend, 50 years.
Some lovely photographs there.
Ger Hoy there, with his daughter and grandson, I would say.
Yeah.
on that, Ger, one of our contributors here on Scariff Bay Community Radio. Pat McNamara is probably there somewhere.
Well, he's at the back there.
Back.
At the back there behind.
On the photograph at the bottom of the page. So they had a great... There is a fantastic community and community spirit in Flagmount, Kilnina.
Yeah.
And you know, it comes across in those photographs.
Yeah, Arthur Hayes came home to unveil a plaque there as well on the building.
Yes.
So, and Pat Hayes is out here on the front, I suppose they're all involved in...
Pat is chairman of the GA Club.
And Pat, this is a great opportunity for me to offer our congratulations to that Dartmouth, at least.
Yes, you did, of course. Big lineup announced for Budyke Festival, and that's on this weekend, finishing tomorrow. So you can get over there this evening, tonight, or go in the morning.
Yeah, I passed over, Judge, and there's a big marquee up there, so they're all prepared.
Yes. So really, it's worthwhile. I see Liam Doyle down there, and he's in discussion. I think it's John Bugler.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It looks like an agitated discussion.
Well, John is refereeing, he's a referee. And Liam is maybe explaining some of the points of the game. Okay.
Can you explain the flourishing of community groups that has emerged in the last 10 years? Because 20 years ago, the idea of a parish festival, now it did have, a kind of a linkage to the marquee era, but it, on the other hand, not very much.
And I remember something as a young fellow here in Scariff, John, a gala week.
Yeah.
And it had a marquee and it had various events, fun type of events.
Patna would be hugely into that. You know, the, yeah. Isn't that right?
But Pat would be more into the marquees. In...
That's what you were saying. Yeah.
Okay, Irish Seed Savers reforestation effort starting to bear fruit. Well, there was a launch of a guide, and the two ladies there, Gillian and Ruth, are holding it. We covered that in Scariff Bay Community Radio.
And of course, the apple trees are in full bloom at the moment.
They're fabulous.
And we're hoping, no, they're fantastic, all of them, and we're hoping for another good season of apple growing throughout the country.
The crab tree there, which is in full bloom behind the two ladies, I think that's one of those that they brought up to President Higgins a few weeks ago.
Well, that's great that President Higgins is a little bit of Clare. Yes.
And finally, Killaloe Balna Historical Society are working with the local two Killaloe National Schools. And the headline there says it all, Grandparents at the Heart of Book of Memories. And I mean, what we're doing, I suppose, you know, Pat said it last week, we're only hitting the paper in spots.
Yeah.
And we're just maybe pointing out, reminding people of the various things that are covered. Okay, yeah. I think, Jim, we
just might remember that game in Super Bowl Park Achieve last week.
Yes.
When we overcome the rebels.
Yes, and I'm sure most of our listeners were listening to the match rather than listening to us at 2 o'clock, but brilliant and well done to all the lads involved.
And we wish them the best of luck against Waterford.
Against Waterford in 2 weeks.
I'm not
time.
Going to rise and to cheap. That sort of comment.
Yeah.
Okay, we leave it at that. Our thanks very much to John S.
Welcome, Jim.
And Pat.
On my notes, thanks, Jim.
And David.
Yeah.
Pat, have we another song? We had BJ Thomas there at the break with Raindrops Keep Falling My Head. What have you know?
This week, in 1994, just 30 years, we had Charlie McGettigan and Paul Hankton won the Eurovision. For the 3rd year in a row, it was the Rock and Roll Kids.
Lovely. So we'll have that, and best of luck, I suppose. Is it next week?
The
Eurovision, yeah. It is. It's coming
Bambi
up.
Bambi Tug,
yes.
Is representing us.
Well, so. You never know.
She's some kind of guilty or something.
Up Cork.
Any gamble on it.
That's right.
Sure, no harm.
Okay, thank you very much from us. All the best. Goodbye. God bless.
I remember 62. I was 16 and so were you. And we lived next door on the avenue.